You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show where we look at the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Perseus.
And today we're joined by Colin, once again, from Trek News and Views and Decade. How's it going?
It's good. I've never been on a podcast with a god before, so it's nice podcasting with Perseus.
I'm not a god. I'm half god.
Oh, you're half god, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you got a cool shield.
Well, not yet. This is around the time I rescued Andromeda.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, tonight's episode is part 7 in our look at the work of Gene Roddenberry as a television creator, and tonight we're going to be looking at Andromeda.
Hells yeah!
So much like Earth Final Conflict, Colin has seen this show in its entirety or close to it, something like that,
yeah.
And Max and I have not, so...
Well, I watched almost all of this show.
Oh, you just said you didn't whenever anyone asked. Okay.
No, I mean over the past week.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
I tried to watch, Earth Final Conflict, but I'm not a drinker.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't make it through it. Andromeda, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but it works.
Yeah. Okay.
Without alcohol.
Well, then, in that case, Max, would you like to sort of talk about what the basic premise for this show is?
It sort of shifts over time in various sort of weird ways, but, I mean, to give sort of the big sort of blue sky Star Trek approach, you know, there's a spaceship, but it was part of, a Federation-type thing, and then because of something that involves time... In this case, they use a black hole, and they try to explain it in a way that makes sense, but it doesn't. They are sort of, shoved really far into the future really, really fast. And the captain and the ship are suddenly way in the distant future, where the entire thing that's like the Federation is completely wiped out, and a whole bunch of different things are now in its place. And then the captain forms a team with a bunch of other people, and then they have Star Trek like adventures, but in a very weird other universe.
Okay, now this show, it was developed by Robert Hewitt Wolfe, who of course had worked on Deep Space Nine, and it starred Kevin Sorbo, who of course played Hercules on Hercules the Legendary Journeys or something like that. Is that what it was called?
It was called Hercules, The Legendary Journeys.
Okay. Yeah.
There was a colon involved.
Yes. And, of course, Kevin Sorbo's presence led to the show Andromeda being affectionately called Captain Hercules by many of its fans and probably many more of its detractors.
Is that a thing people actually say? Because I have only heard that from you.
I don't know. I heard it from a guy.
No, it was said by quite a few people.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
First time I heard it was in the comic book store. White Fritz called it Captain Hercules. He said, I watched that show. Captain Hercules.
The weird thing about White Fritz is that he's a black guy.
No, he's not.
It's funnier if he is.
Okay, there's a black Fritz and a white Fritz. Both of them shop at the comic book store. Neither of them are named Fritz. Deal with it. So, Colin, what are your thoughts on Andromeda? On the whole,
A guy started off really, really good. He had a really strong opening premise, which wonderfully described by Max. But you could see why people compared it to Star Trek, because you didn't have the Federation, you had the Commonwealth, you had one captain and his ship. So, you know, Star Trek is the captain and the ship, and you had the weird collection of individuals that made up his crew. And some really dodgy makeup.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was watching this with my wife, and at one point when the dude comes on, I think the bad guy from the first episode, she's like, are we watching Zubily Zoo? So yeah, okay, so Colin, go on. Aside from the dodgy makeup, You like
starting from the dodgy makeup, and you got the surviving captain is Dylan Hunt, who is the last captain of what was the Commonwealth, and was the Commonwealth military was called the High Guard. He was supposed to be this massive fleet of ships, because the actual Andromeda series takes place in three galaxies. It's not one; it's three galaxies.
Okay.
And the way they travelled around was by slipstream drive, which will be
one of those galaxies is the Andromeda Galaxy.
Yeah, one of them is the Milky Way.
Yeah,
and humans aren't the focus in this series, which is unusual in science fiction. Humans aren't the focus species. Dylan is perceived to be human at the start, but you find out at the end that he's not. And it's basically one man's quest to bring back the glory of the Commonwealth and what it stood for, and put the universe back on its rightful path.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a noble sentiment, and it was a good premise. And I don't know if, like last week when we was talking, I don't know if this was on a beer mat or a handkerchief or you know,
well,
blue roll. I don't know.
I'll tell you what it is. I can tell you exactly what it is, because I got the answer straight from the source. When I was watching
R-H-Dubs.
When I was watching this episode, or these episodes, I came across, I think it was episode 4, and I said, hey, I'm prepping for our Andromeda episode of the show by watching the episode D-0, which was written by Zach Stentz and Ashley Edward Miller, who are the writers of lots of things, including X-Men First Class and Thor. They also wrote for Fringe, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, a bunch of stuff. But anyway, and I'm like, wow, you know, they really had a lot of big shots working on this show. And almost immediately, both of them tweeted back to me, and they're like, and us too. We were on the show. And then, you know, they were like, this is our first produced script. So I said, okay, well, how much of it was, you know, Robert Hewitt Wolf, and how much of it was Gene Roddenberry? And they said, a bit of Gene, a whole lot of Robert Hewitt Wolf, with a dash of Gene Kuhn, maybe a big dash. And I'm like, Gene Kuhn? Too? Gene Kuhn obviously being the guy who, you know, kind of ran the original series writing staff, you know, for the first season or whatever. He wrote a ton of episodes. The Forgotten Gene, as he's known by many people. And, you know, they were like, well, in spirit, you know, he may not have done anything on it, but they were definitely taking a Gene Kuhn approach to producing these things. And then Robert Hewitt Wolf chimed in, and he said, you know, to answer the question, how much of Andromeda was Roddenberry? You know, I said, it seems a lot like Genesis 2 in space. Did he have more developed beyond that? And Wolf said, not much, honestly. I combined his one-page pitch for a sentient ship with the lead character and rough situation of Genesis 2 and put it in space. Pretty much all else, characters, mythology, history, aliens, etc., was mine. His created by is really for the basic idea and marketing. My developed by was contractual as well, but I still got creation royalties. Was a wonderful opportunity.
So he came up with the Nietzscheans?
Right, from what I gather, yeah.
Which is interesting, because that is actually based on a German philosopher's principle.
Yeah. Which I thought was really kind of crazy when...
Well, it's not that weird, because, I mean, based on the original show, I mean, you can look at the original series, you know, Genesis 2, and you can say, oh, yeah, super beings. That's kind of a Nietzsche idea. And then, you know, they become Nietzscheans, and as a person who knows, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche, I'm like, what? That's just too weird. That's too on the nose. That's too on the nose.
No, but they say that they, like, follow his philosophies and stuff. Like, they reference him in the show.
Yes! You know? No one would call themselves
okay.
the Ubermensch.
Okay.
Not in the distant future. That's not a good idea. It seems weird. It's like, hey, we're based on the thing that this guy wrote like hundreds of years ago. We haven't advanced the idea at all. We have not embellished it with any sort of new philosophies. We have not recognized that it was dated. None of that. We're just like, Nietzsche, yeah!
There's even that one line in the first one where, like, I think they might... I don't remember the context, and maybe they were on the edge of a black hole or something like that, and the Nietzschean guy on the bridge is like, when you look into abyss, the abyss looks back at you. And it's like, really?
They were setting something up. They were setting up the abyss. The abyss is an actual thing.
You mean like the movie?
No,
the abyss.
I mean,
an
the abyss is an actual thing. Yeah, in it's Andromeda. An it's a villain.
Yeah, it's the ultimate bad guy.
There's also a really funny part in the pilot where that one guy is like, "Hey, you should probably put me in the brig. Why? Because you know I'm the same race as those guys. And you know what they always say: judge people by what race they are. Yeah, that's a good point. I should do that."
Yeah.
And he puts all of them in the brig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can talk about that. My thoughts on the show basically are like, I don't know, from a writing standpoint or whatever, I can see how it could get good. I mean, I didn't particularly like what I saw, but I could see it potentially going to a place which is interesting. But again, I felt like it was killed by its budget, you know? I mean, it feels like watching almost like a theatrical presentation. Like, I mean like live theater, you know?
Yes, except, I mean, that, like, in a lot of ways, that's actually one of the benefits of science fiction on television. I mean, Star Trek certainly suffered from some budgetary things, but, I mean, by embracing that sort of theatrical quality, I mean, they're actually able to do a lot of, like, much more interesting things than they would otherwise if they were just, strictly speaking, do a sci-fi action series.
But I mean, there's, if this show would have had even Star Trek's budget, you know, I think that it would have succeeded. Because, like, especially if you look at, like, the people involved in everything, I mean, like, even from the production end, like, again, you know, just like with Earth Final Conflict, Alan Craker, there's actually a lot of people from Earth Final Conflict who worked on Andromeda on the production end, but Alan Craker directed the pilot. And, like, you're watching and you're like, well, I've seen a lot of stuff that this guy has done, you know, mainly on Star Trek, but also on Battlestar Galactica and some other stuff, and it's like, this dude knows what he's doing. You know, he's not an amateurish filmmaker by any stretch of the imagination. I really think the problem is he doesn't have the money to do what he needs to do. And if they would have, you know, just sort of acknowledged the fact that, you know, you can't do all the stuff that you want to do and maybe scaled back the show a little bit, in order to put more money into things which aren't as expensive to do, then I would have bought the show more. You know what I mean?
I think that you're being unreasonably harsh on something that, like, the show is actually really good about. I mean, compare. All right, seriously compare the entire production, like just the production values of Andromeda with a contemporary science fiction show like Earth Final Conflict.
Okay.
Like the world of Andromeda has, you know, much better sets, much better practical effects, much better, like, cinematography. I mean, look at the spaceships in that series. Like, the interiors are gigantic and intricate. There are tons of details all over the place. There's a whole bunch of, like, really, you know, different lighting schemes within just the first few episodes of the show. You have to go, yeah, they were doing a lot of things all the time. And if you compare it to Earth Final Conflict, where they have rooms that straight up exist in the real world that you don't need to make, and they manage to have nothing in them aside from one person in some cheap makeup moving their hands in a weird way.
Well, I did have people in bad makeup moving their hands in a weird way.
On this show, too. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes, I but mean, they were
you
in,
had,
like...
You had a bloke who looks like a dog.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well.
And you had another bloke who looked like a cheap man's Chewbacca.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, a dog? I thought of the guy with the hair as looking more like a sloth. And the other guy as looking like a bat, but like sculpted by a baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like some of the CGI and stuff like that. I mean, like the very first thing that we see is like this like big shot of, you know, Kevin Sorbo jumping down a thing and having the gravity thing, and it's
that's not a problem of production. That's a problem of writing something into a script that is a stupid idea. But, and then when the director's like, "I can't make that look good," the producer goes, "Well, we're gonna keep it anyway."
I guess that's what I'm saying. That's kind of what it felt like, and it's like,
right, but that's not a budget thing. That's a stupid idea for a shot thing.
Well, maybe, but I think that, you know, budget, it, you know, comes into play as well. I don't know. I
could have also been using that scene to show you how big the ship was.
Yeah, I think you could find
a better
way.
Because if you'd just stepped into a lift and then stepped out of a lift, you wouldn't have had a concept of the ship size.
I think they could have found a better way. I don't know.
Yeah, they could have made the lift.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of different things you could do. You could have a guy say, "Hey, how big is this ship?" And he could say, "Oh, it's pretty big."
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty big. I mean, like, you'd think like they're big ships.
You can do like Picard and Lily in First Contact, 24 decks, almost 700 meters.
Yeah. I mean, like, those are numbers. Like, I mean, like, you could say 20 something decks. It's like, well, how big is a deck? What is a meter?
Yeah, how big is a meter?
You know, and like, there are a lot of different things you could do. I mean, my feeling is that, you know, if you wanted to sell that a ship is big, I mean, like, everything in space is big to us. I mean, you know, like a bathroom is large for space because we can't get anything up there. But
to put it into American terms, then, it's roughly half a mile long.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, but like, if you say, like, if the captain of the ship says, "Oh, yeah, I mean, there are big ships, this ship, even bigger than those."
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mine's bigger than yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Dylan was saying, especially when he's playing with his staff.
Okay, so now Robert Hewitt Wolf,
I call him R.H. Dubs.
Okay, he's R.H. Dubs. He's done a number of other things, you know, but prior to this, Deep Space Nine was his big show. He was Ira Stephen Bear's writing partner for, I think, the first 5 seasons. He also wrote Fistful of Data's on Next Generation. He worked on the Twilight Zone show that Bear did, and he worked on the 4400, and now he's working on Alphas. Is he running Alphas? I think he might be, right? I don't know. So other Star Trek people who worked on the show, we already talked about Alan Craker, but there was also, of course, Majel Barrett as the executive producer. She wasn't on this show, which is so weird because it's like the first time that she's not on a show that Gene Roddenberry created.
I call her M-Rod because I call Gene Rod Gene Rod.
Now Wolf, he was on the show for like a year and a half, and then there were some creative differences between him and the studio, I guess.
Well, he had some creative ideas. And they disapproved of that.
Because he wanted a story arc.
Right.
Yeah. And they wanted episodic stories.
Right. And they wanted every episode to be about Dylan Hunt, the Kevin Sorbo character. And he wanted to cover the entire
Commonwealth.
Okay.
Yeah. He wanted to do like a DS9, Babylon 5 type thing where you can have standalone episodes, but essentially everything feeds into everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to tell a story arc. Okay. And they said, no, because now,
syndication. Lots of weird stuff happened over the course of the executive side of the show.
Yeah.
So now,
it's also interesting that the rest of the cast, when they knew it was going to get like knocked on the head, they tried to petition the studio to do a spin-off series without Kevin Sorbo.
So that wouldn't have been after the show. It would have like run at the same time.
Well, it would have been when they closed it off in the last episode when he destroyed the Abyss.
The Abyss. Yeah, he destroys the Abyss, that thing that we referenced earlier.
Uh-huh.
He destroys it.
And then he would have gone off and carried on forming the Commonwealth, and then the rest of the crew would have gone off on their own adventures, and that would have been the spin-off.
So was this like at the end of season two?
Season five.
Yeah. There's also some time travel involved.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And towards the end of the series, the characters start to explicitly make comments like, "Wait, does this count? Did that count? Did that thing we do earlier count? Mm. What events have we nullified by performing these actions?"
Yeah.
As if to say, "Hey, people watching the show, we know we've changed a bunch of things. Please do not hate us for doing so."
No. And it also goes all far in a conflict with everyone being half a species as everyone else.
I mean, but, like, at least on Andromeda, like, there was an explanation for how it happened, like, yeah, in the show, whereas on Earth Final Conflict, it was like, "You're actually a quarter alien." And on Andromeda, it was like, "Oh my god, her face is burning off. All we've got are these medical devices made by these aliens. But if we remake her face, she'll be half alien. Who cares? Do it anyway."
Okay.
Sometimes you gotta do that.
So a couple of other things with the production. When I first saw the commercials for this show or whatever, and I'm like, okay, so they're basically making Star Trek but with Kevin Sorbo, I was like, that seems like an incredibly bad idea. You know, I couldn't help but see Kevin Sorbo as Hercules. I couldn't help but see him cast in Hercules for any reason other than his, you know, physical nature or what have you.
And the show is named after another Greek mythological character?
But when I was watching this, I was like, wow, you know, Kevin Sorbo, he's not bad at all. You know, he doesn't feel like he's just put in there. He does not feel like Captain Hercules. He feels like just a guy, just an actor who they put in this, just like if they had put William Shatner in there or anything like that.
So except they continually reference his impressive physical stature and amazingness.
Okay.
And at least one instance, they make a joke about him being like a Greek god. Although Hercules was a demigod.
That was in the pilot, yeah, when I was sitting there watching that with
my
life.
But they do explain he's increased physical strength and he's increased stature. That is explained.
Yes.
Okay.
Because his mum is genetically engineered to live on a high-gravity environment.
And his dad was Zeus.
Yeah. So when you get Zeus mating with someone who's genetically engineered to live on a high, you get a really tall guy with really big muscles who's really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And who's not human.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't human, because he was a paradigm.
But
The paradigms. Oh, that'll be fun. Let's get to those.
Okay. Well, first, just before you get to the paradigms, let me just say that yeah, I did think that he was good in this show. But there was one other thing which I found rather amusing is, you know, I always thought that the production value of the show when looking at commercials and stuff like that was sort of like. More about like the lighting and everything, the way that the sets were lit and stuff like that. It was like charmingly low budget, you know. And when I saw Jason X, I was like, this movie is great, you know. I mean, I really love Jason X, and one of the things that I really liked about it was sort of the cheesy, charmingly low budget look of the sets and the lighting. And I always would compare it to basically Andromeda. I'd say, like, this movie looks just like Andromeda. I love it. And then I'm watching Andromeda, and two of the people who were in Jason X are in Andromeda. One as a robot and one as not. And from,
oh, that's spooky.
And from
wait,
what
no,
I read,
it's not.
From what I read, they flipped them. The one who was the robot in Andromeda is not a robot in Jason X and vice versa.
Okay, that's really offensive. They're androids, okay?
Oh, my bad. Anyway, now what were you talking about? The
paradigms.
The paradigm, yeah.
Yeah, which is Dylan Hunt's true species. Because it's up until he's revealed you think he's human. And he's not. He's from a race called the Paradigm, who can quite literally step through space and time.
Now is this
literally step
but through. I mean, aren't we stepping through space and time anytime we walk? I mean, we're in space, we're in time.
Now was this done in like after season two?
Yeah, season three.
Okay, so this had nothing to do with Robert Hewitt Wolf, theoretically.
No, they decided to expand his character, by giving him a special power. Because everyone else had one, so he needed one, you know.
So what was his special power? Just walking through space and time?
He could hop around in... He could time travel and space travel without a ship, begging the question, why have a ship on the show?
Well, the ship's his buddy, and I think he has a crush on the ship.
On Rummy.
Which you can't really blame him for.
No, you can't blame anyone for having a crush on Lexa.
Are you sure? I think I can do that. I can pull it off.
Well, you could probably blame someone, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you watch the outtakes and the blooper reel, then you might change your opinion, bearing in mind what she does every time she gets something wrong.
Oh, did she take her top off?
She hoists her boobs up.
Wow, I was not way off. That's disturbing.
There you go.
It's not good when the thing that I say as a completely absurd thing is pretty close to the actual thing. Never a good situation where the sarcastic comment is the truth.
So let me ask you guys, did you notice a shift in quality after Robert Hewitt Wolf left?
Yes, from season 3 to season 5.
It's not that good.
It's slightly less on a production value, and the writing is not as strong.
Well, I think, like, for me, it was that, like, the show, which at that point had some sort of consistency, suddenly became insane.
Yeah.
Like, it really did, like, I love it when a show actually sort of, like, follows the logic that one would imagine. Like, oh, the guy who's running the show is gone, now no one's running it, now it's just a runaway train. It really was! It was so pleasant. It was like, oh my god, that's awesome. Like, I love it when it actually works out the way one would think.
Now, I read somewhere on Wikipedia or something like that, that after the show ended, Robert Hewitt Wolf wrote, like, a little one-act play or something like that.
Oh, his coda.
Yeah. His coda, where, like, he basically, you know, he doesn't contradict what they had done, but he explains... Yeah. He wrote and published a one-act play entitled Coda that explained his intended plans for the show without contradicting the already aired episodes.
Yeah. And it makes sense.
Did you?
Years ago, I remember reading it. When you're reading it, you're kind of thinking, "I wish he'd stayed."
Yeah.
It's akin to Manny Coto when Manny Coto came onto Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a significant shift in. Imagine that the other way around.
And any other things that you guys want to cover in terms of Andromeda before I ask my final question?
I don't hate this show. Like, I you know, when we were watching this, I was like, yeah, I'll just keep going. And there were points where I was like, all right, I know what's happening in this episode. Let's go to the next one, because I don't want to keep watching this one. That happened a few times. But, I mean, that's normal for any series. That happens to me when I'm watching Next Gen, and I love Next Gen. So, I'm not making a general criticism of the series. I don't hate this show. I don't even come close to hating this show. There are lots of problems, but I do not hold those problems against any individuals.
Well, people who know you know that when you say, I don't hate this show, that's high praise for a show. So,
yeah. Cool. If I met somebody involved with the production of this show, I would not stab them.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, okay, cool. I was not tremendously fond of this show, but I could see its potential. So, take that as you will. Now, here's the question I asked this last week, too. I'm going to ask it again. Do you think that Roddenberry would have created this show?
Yes.
Max?
In a sense, no. He probably wouldn't have done the spaceship aspect of it, because, I mean, not because there's anything wrong with it, but I mean, like, it's sort of obvious that, like, it's a really good way of solving the inherent problem of dealing with all of these various factions. And he probably wouldn't have done it just because it was too much like Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I could see him doing this. I really could. I mean, maybe part of it is that he tried to do Genesis 2 like 15 times, and this is essentially a version of Genesis 2, so he could finally do that. But, like, the space element to it, I don't think is really that big of a stretch. You know, maybe it's a little too like Star Trek, but I think that he's okay with it. He would be okay with it. I think that he would be much happier with this show than he would have been with Earth Final Conflict.
Sure. I mean, I imagine that if you said, hey, we got the show, he'd be like, oh, this is a cool show. I like this. Spaceships, aliens, people shooting at each other. And they'd say, Earth Final Conflict. Yeah. That's based on a thing you wrote. He's like, I did not write that. That is not a thing.
Nothing to do with Mike.
Yeah. With Andromeda, it would be like, it'd be like, it's just like, it's like Earth 2. It's like Genesis 2. It's just like that. Except it's in space, like Star Trek. Like, I wouldn't do that. That's like me ripping myself off. I mean, you can actually see evidence of that in his various attempts at making that show in various forms. You know, the thing about, you know, Genesis 2 and then, what was the second one?
Planet Earth,
yeah. And then Strange New World. Like, the one thing that didn't happen was that they were like, hey, let's put it in space. And I think that the reason you don't put it on a spaceship is because, I mean, we might see it as obvious, but I think that's because we're sort of, you know, accustomed to the idea that putting things on a spaceship is not necessarily like Star Trek. Star Trek is just another show that's on a spaceship. But if from that perspective, from Roddenberry's perspective, putting a thing on a spaceship is like halfway there to making it Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think he would have put it in space. I mean, that's I imagine he would never have done that. He would have, like, you know, tried to make it 1,000 more times, and maybe at some point would have said, maybe we should put it in space. Nope.
No, I disagree with that. I think that, like, you know, if he was really as fond of Genesis 2 as he seems to have been, seeing as how many times he tried to get it on the air, I think that if someone would have said, you want to do this show? Okay, we'll do the show, but we're going to put it in space. He probably would have said, okay. Well, that's about all the time that we have for today. Colin, where can people find you?
You can find Trek News and Views on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and on Trek FM Network. And you can find me on Twitter at colmh01.
All right, and as always, you can find us at our other show, Commentary Track Stars, at commentarytrackstars.com. You can also find us on Twitter at comtrackstars and on the email at comtrackstars@gmail.com. So give us some feedback. Let us know what you think. And we will be back next week with a wrap-up of our Gene Roddenberry series, where we take a look at his work on the whole and try to draw some conclusions of some sort.
We're going to draw some conclusions on a napkin and then lose that napkin.
And then make a fortune in 20 years' time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It'll be called Roddenberry, Conclusions.
Yeah, got to stick with the cola.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Colin. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we will talk to you again soon.